Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour of the Alex Jones Show is on. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'll be joined shortly by Dinesh D'Souza. We'll get into all sorts of stuff, probably starting with what's going on with the Republican Party and whether it's even possible to save the midterms at this point, what needs to be done to achieve that. But I want to go to this video. I think this is important because this is happening sort of an increasing rate around America. And it's very troubling to see the American people sort of fall into this false dichotomy. And not even a false dichotomy necessarily, just an inversion of reality where they are supporting restrictions to free speech because they think that it's defending free speech. There's a very weird sort of inverted censorship going on. And this is how it's actually affecting the American people. Let's go to clip number 9 here. This is an American in Tennessee saying he was followed by police for looking up articles on a library computer. Let's watch.
So I just had the police called on me at the Spring Hill, Tennessee library for printing out articles about the IDF committing genocide and pedophilia. Yeah, I'm having trouble believing what just happened to me right now. So here's the story time, as quick as I possibly can. So my printer broke, and so I went to Spring Hill, Tennessee's library, and I didn't know how to do everything, so I was asking for help. And the librarian saw that I was printing out articles about genocide and how the ITF is raping Palestinian prisoners, how they snipe babies, you know, from reputable news. Right here, this is it. See? These articles. Well, I guess she called the police about it because as I was leaving, a cop was coming in. I went to my car and started pulling out. And as I pulled out, the cop jumped in front of me and said this.
Allie? What's going on? Abby? What do you
mean? They said you were sweating profusely. What's going on with you?
I was trying to print some things because I need to get to my dogs. What do you mean?
Man,
yes. The police officer stopped me because he said he got a call that I was sweating profusely or something. Whatever nonsense he's making up to try to stop me and say there's something wrong with me, so he's concerned. Unfortunately, I must have hit pause, but immediately after this happened, I asked him, what crime did I commit? Am I being detained? He said no. I left. As I left, I saw him get on his radio. And as I pull out, two cruisers get behind me and follow me all the way home. See, we can't go to a library and print things out about the terrorist organization, the ITF, without Zionist calling the police. This is insane. This needs to end. We need to be able to call out pedophilia and genocide without the police being fine.
I gotta say, who has that reaction? Who sees somebody printing stuff out, starts freaking out, and calls the police? Not an American. An American would never do that type of thing. You might talk to him. You might have a conversation with him. You might say, what is this? You know, I've got some other information you might be interested in. But to call the police out of fear, this is what is being implanted in people's minds, that if you see somebody that opposes the secular nation state of Israel and their activities in war, that you are somehow a dangerous, insane person that needs to be locked away. That is such a crazy mindset for people to have personally adopted. This isn't being forced on anybody. This is them basically inculcating and taking unto themselves this position as school marm and hall monitor. And I'm sick of it. It's not American. It's un-American. It's anti-free speech. And I, for one, won't stand for it. More on the other side with Dinesh D'Souza. Go nowhere.
I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria of the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available at galaxystore.com. The very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you got to do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. TheAlexandroStore.com to get T3, now available, and methylene blue at TheAlexandroStore.com.
The answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. It is the second hour here on this live broadcast for Wednesday, the 15th of April, 2026. I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Dinesh D'Souza. He, of course, is an author, filmmaker, and host of the weekly show, Dinesh. He's also come out with a new article called The Real Estate President, Iran Nukes, and Leverage, attempting, I guess, to make sense of Trump's strategy and the way he approaches geopolitical problems so the rest of us can understand it. Welcome to the show, sir.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure is mine. Tell us about your new article and what we're going to do here, because it seems to me like the Republicans have sort of abandoned the coalition that we built to get Trump in 2024. I'm very worried about the midterms. It doesn't look like it's going to go our way, and it doesn't look like the Republicans are doing anything to rectify that. How do we solve this? What do we do? We only have a couple months here, Dinesh.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about the midterms. I'd like to start by talking a little bit about making sense of Trump, because it is so customary for us, whether on the right, even on the left, to try to understand Trump ideologically. Is Trump an isolationist? Is he an interventionist? If he's an interventionist, what kind of an interventionist is he? And so on. And I argue that this is the wrong way to look at Trump completely. Trump can be understood more as a real estate man, a real estate president. Now, remember that a lot of people who voted for Trump going back to 2016 said, you know, we want a businessman. We don't want a politician. And I'm saying that's what you got. You actually got a business guy, but not any kind of a business guy, right? Trump is not a tech mogul. Trump is a builder. He's a guy who stands in the construction lot. He puts up tall buildings. He evaluates property. And my argument is that he looks at America as a kind of prize piece of real estate, with all the things in America as representing the assets, the sort of facilities of that real estate. He views the world as a large plot of land. And he essentially looks at the presidency as protecting the interests of sort of America Inc. or America LLC, projecting our influence, our power, trying to acquire more assets, trying to bring foreign investment over here, trying to disrupt the people who are messing with the kind of free flow of commerce and goods and services in the lanes, the real estate lanes of the world, which are of course the oceans as well as the air as well as land. So if you look at Trump in this way, a lot of the things that he says and does that otherwise seem bizarre now begin to make sense.
Interesting. So how would that relate to something like the Iran wars? I get what you're saying, and you know that is sort of what we liked about Trump, but obviously there's some major differences between a land deal or a business and the country. We can't, you know, declare bankruptcy and move on from our country, right? There's some pretty key differences that make a strategy that would apply to business or real estate totally non-functional when it comes to running a country. So how would this apply to something like the Iran war? This is one that I cannot wrap my mind around. I cannot make sense of Trump's motivation here. Seems like it's ever changing, and we're not getting what we said we were going to get. So how would this view help us make sense of that?
Well, I think the way Trump looks at it He certainly doesn't see it as a war for democracy. He's not trying to create direct kind of regime change in Iran. I think the way he looks at it is that there are good Muslims and bad Muslims. Now, who are the good Muslims? Well, they're the people, by and large, who are trying to modernize the Middle East. And by modernize, I mean, quite simply, to increase the real estate value of the region, which is Trump's kind of compass, right? Trump even looks at the rubble in Gaza and he goes, hey, man, I see some like tall buildings. I see some coffee shops. You know, he doesn't say this, but maybe a Trump hotel. So Trump is looking at this as this is wasted land when it's all rubble. And he likes places like the United Arab Emirates or even Saudi Arabia, because those countries are thinking far more about artificial intelligence and robotics than they're thinking about, let's say, the Quran. Now, who does Trump not like? Well, he doesn't like the 7th century Muslims, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the Iranian mullahs. Why? Because those people are all about taking a sort of fanatical ideology and using it to disrupt the free flow of commerce and trade and good relations in the region. I mean, a lot of Muslim countries are perfectly happy to do business with Israel, but not Iran. So Trump is like, these people are like a menace. You know, they're like, they're tormenting the free flow of goods and services in the world. We have to stop them. So when the Iranians go, listen, you know, we're going to encircle the Straits of Hormuz, we're going to, you know, block it. Trump goes, okay, well, you block it and we'll block you. We'll make another circle around you. And that's a way of cordoning off your power and influence. So for Trump, it's really connected to energy. It's connected to resources. It's connected to the price of oil in the global markets. So I think here's a guy who sees America's foreign and domestic policy as connected, as really being the same thing. All of it aimed at enhancing the property value. And by property value, I mean the lives of the people, their homes, their assets, here in the United States. Ultimately, that's what Trump means by America first.
I guess I just don't understand how this benefits us. And do you think that that maybe view is why he's seems to be a little bit incapable of grasping the worldview of somebody that doesn't think like that? In other words, he might be seeing this as a real estate deal and these people aren't, you know, developing it to the maximum potential, which would make sense from his point of view, but they're sitting there going, yeah, but it's my home and I don't want to give it up. You know, that's sort of an incompatible worldview. And I've heard Trump say this in interviews where he's talking about people in Lebanon. He's like, I don't know why they stay there. They're getting bombed. And it's like, well, it's because he seems not willing to, you know, understand the mindset of people in Iran are like, we'd rather live in rubble and not be subject to you in Israel than be in a 5-star hotel and feel like slaves. I mean, is there something in Trump's worldview that makes it, you know, incompatible with getting to peace with these people?
Well, I think this stuff is really complicated because I think that the mullahs in Iran are not devoted to Iran as kind of their little piece of home. I think that they're devoted primarily to Islam. Now, who's my source of this? They are. They'll even say, they go, we don't care about Iran. We care about Islam. We are part of the Islamic project. I mean, Khomeini never saw himself primarily as an Iranian. Now, we in the West often identify more with our home country than we do, for example, with our religion. But that is not the case for these radical Muslims. Islam comes first. Their country, their tribe, if anything, comes second, third, maybe fourth. So it's the Islamic project that we're dealing with here. But even there, like I say, Trump is not like I'm against the Islamic project. Trump is like there are two Islamic projects. There's the Islamic modernization project. I like that one. And then there's the Islamic like death cult. I don't like that one. So I think Trump here is, you know, and it's very difficult to talk about Trump, you know, because you can't change Trump, right? Trump, we know, looking back at him a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades, this is a guy who has been shaped on the construction lot. This is a guy who's been shaped by New York City. He has a brash style. He can't be anything other than he is. So we need to assess who he is, what he's doing, and then ask ourselves, is this so bad? Because look, who are the most successful people in the world right now? Which is the country that has been coming up the fastest? China. China's transactional exactly like Trump. China's not ideological. You know, China goes to Africa and, you know, the United States for many years was like, you Africans need to join with us because, you know, we believe in democracy. You believe in democracy. The Chinese are like, forget about that. We'll give you $500 million to build a port. you'll then become dependent on us. And that's because we have financial leverage over you. So what I'm saying is, this is the language that Trump speaks. This is the language that he understands. It's the language of transactional dealing with people in the world as merchants and traders, traders, and not dealing with people as ideologues.
Well, sure, but doesn't that clash with the idea that he's against this radical form of Islam? Because it seems to me like the Saudi Arabian form of Islam is a little bit more radical. It seems to me like Syria was previously governed by a guy who'd been to Western universities. Now it's being governed by a former al-Qaeda leader, and it's become total chaos. I mean, Iran, for all of its religious inclinations, was a fairly modern country, right? I mean, it's as modern as anywhere else in the area. So it seems like that can't be the delineation. It seems like it's more like who's willing to play ball with Israel, who's willing to make deals with Israel. That seems to be the dividing line between whether or not they're on the good side or the bad side when it comes to Trump's view.
I don't think that's it at all. I think that the way Trump sees it, the value of Israel is this. They live in that bad neighborhood. And because they live over there, they actually understand it better than we do. You know, it's kind of like some guy in the suburbs who is going to the city, but he's got a friend who lives like on 126th Street in New York. That guy actually knows much better where the gangs are, what alley to avoid, because he lives there. And so the Israelis are actually, they've taken the measure of radical Islam. They have detailed knowledge down to the names of people and where they live and who their uncle is and who they're married to and what they care about and what kind of pager they use. America can't even get close to that kind of specificity. So I think Trump thinks that the Israelis are useful because they inhabit that bad neighborhood and their intelligence on the ground is much better than ours.
But it's not perfect, right? I mean, they were wrong about the regime falling, right? That's what's been revealed recently with the new Mossad chief, basically the new Mossad chief and the old chief, current one, David Barnea, both sort of promised that the regime would fall immediately. We know that Netanyahu was promised by Mossad that they'd be able to sort of overthrow the regime through the color revolutions they were launching. But, I mean, both of those failed. So now, as a consequence of trusting the Israeli intelligence, we're in a bit of a quagmire, right? So, I mean, I don't think our reliance or adherence to Israeli intelligence has been beneficial to us. It seems like the thing that's directly gotten into a mess that we seem incapable of extricating ourselves from.
Look, Iran is a closed society, and they have been since 1979, as you know. The idea of getting perfect intelligence in a place like that, extremely difficult. I mean, to get an idea of how bad our intelligence is, the United States had no idea the Soviet Union was about to collapse. I mean, think about that. We've been studying the Soviet Union minutely, using massive resources for half a century. And we had no idea that the whole thing was about to collapse between 1989 and 1992. So I don't disagree that Israel's intelligence is probably quite imperfect. The second thing I want to say is that if you're not going to put boots on the ground, you're not going to go door to door, you are going to try to somehow topple a society from the outside, you're going to need to rely on the Iranian people at home to do it. They have to sort of seize control of their own country. Now, can they do it? Yes. I mean, we've seen it happen. Look at the end of the Cold War. I saw with my own eyes the people of Poland, the Czechs, the Romanians. I mean, they went into the presidential palace. They yanked Ceausescu out of his office. I mean, these guys took control of their own country. So I argue that in the end, we cannot fight for other people's freedom. They've got to take it themselves. We can sort of create the conditions for it, but the Iranian people need to do it. Are they capable of doing it? Yes. Are they capable of ruling their own country? Yes, because they did it before. So you yourself said that we have seen an Iran that is peaceful, that's prosperous, that's pro-American, and obviously that would be of great value to us if we could get that again. But we're not willing to put boots on the ground to achieve that, and I agree with this. So if Israel wants to go do that, they can be our guest and go ahead. I think this is the case where U.S. interests and Israeli interests diverge.
Okay, but we seem to be serving Israeli interests because, I don't understand how our interest was really served by this at all. Obviously, boots on the ground would be necessary, but none of the groundwork was done. I mean, the reason I bring up the Israeli intelligence being wrong is because that was the argument as to why we need to support them. But if they're providing us false or faulty intelligence, then that sort of does away with their value as being the knowledgeable ones in that neighborhood, right? I mean, if we're going to be trusting them for our intelligence, it needs to be trustworthy.
I mean, you're using such a peculiar standard to measure this war, right? Because look at this. Israel is a country of what? 10 to 12 million people. Iran, 90 million. Iran has massive resources. They're an oil-rich country. They claim at least the moral support of 2 billion Muslims around the world. They have tentacles that stretch far and wide. So for a country like Israel to be able to pummel Iran is quite remarkable, quite stunning, really. And for the United States to get into this, call it a war, call it a military expedition, whatever you want to call it, with so little loss of life and being able to essentially debilitate an entire powerful country that's been a menace for 50 years, I mean, this to me is a spectacular success. I mean, look at any other war, right? In the Civil War, you know, if the North lost 3,500 people and Robert E. Lee lost 2,500, this would be a massive victory for the South because we only lost 2,500 and they lost 3,500. Here we have Iran taking massive defeats and the United States is losing virtually nothing. And we know like one missile comes through and like four guys are hurt in, you know, the outskirts of Jerusalem. And it's like, oh, wow, Iran is really striking back. This is not what I call striking back. This is like a Monty Python skit in which the guy has no arms and legs and is still yelling and screaming, and we're pretending like the fight is still really going on. No, this is a remarkable case of the United States and Israel having taken, I think, a powerful country, Iran. And by the way, it's really funny to see it's the Saudis and even the Qataris and certainly the United Arab Emirates all cheering from the sidelines. They're even lobbying America to do more. Apparently, the Saudi prince, Mohammed bin Sultan, has been telling Trump, you need to go all the way. So this is a case where, you know, I might have worried if all the Muslims were kind of coming up against us in a united form, but they're not doing that. Many of them are really happy to see Iran go down.
See, this is where I'm confused, because I've got headlines saying the exact opposite. Saudi Arabia pressures Trump to scale back war in Iran. Mohammed bin Salman wants the U.S. president to lift quarantine of Iranian ports, say diplomats. Like, this is, it seems like there are not two sort of clearly defined sides. It seems like everybody's being pressured by everybody else. I mean, obviously, it would be impressive if little tiny Israel had taken on Iran by itself. But, you know, they're incapable of doing anything without our help. They can't even bomb Iran without refueling with American, you know, air tankers. So, you know, I'm not that impressed by Israel being able to, you know, act sort of insane, knowing that America is the shield to protect them from retaliation as much as we can. So, yeah, well, I mean, I cannot see the victory in any of this. I mean, obviously, the fight is still going on because the Strait of Hormuz is still closed, right? And there's been no agreement. I mean, they've spent 2.5 years bombing Gaza into rubble. Hamas is still holding military parades. So obviously, an air campaign is insufficient for any meaningful change. But we're not going to send ground troops in there. Israel doesn't have the ground troops. They don't even have the ground troops to take over the parts of Lebanon they've depopulated. So, I mean, this just seems like an abysmal failure on every side, and that Trump's just trying to, you know, save face by putting a good spin on it. I really don't see the victory we've achieved here.
Well, if you start with Gaza, you know, you essentially had in Gaza the equivalent of a two-state solution, right? Because Gaza had elections in the early 2000s, Hamas came to power. They essentially turned Gaza into this armed camp. And yes, you can expect that when Hamas has autonomy over Gaza, over 25 years, they're going to build tunnels. They're going to create essentially fortifications in Gaza. They're able to hide these hostages, even though in theory the hostages are inside of Israel. The Israelis can't find them.
Well, you can do a lot of tunnel digging with $35 million a month provided by Netanyahu.
Yes. I mean, I think that going back to Sharon, the view in Israel was, okay, let's give these people essentially a part of the country to call their own, and let's see what they do with it. And what they did with it is made it a launching pad on October 7th for an attack. Now, if anyone had done that to you or me, coming, let's say, from a hostile neighborhood, we would have retaliated exactly the same way. Now, Are we going to solve the problem? No, because, you know, ultimately, I think the problem is in the minds of the people, right? In other words, if you have a massive educational indoctrination program through the schools, you know, you want to be a martyr, you get money for being a suicide bomber, jihad is your goal in life, we prefer death to life. I mean, if this is what you teach the children year upon year upon year, yeah, you're ultimately going to create a festering society. And it's very difficult to solve that problem in the long term. So I don't have any illusions that this can be easily resolved just by bombing buildings or something. No, you can't do that. But you still do have to retaliate when they attack you first.
Well, you know, all that, you know, is just to say that obviously you can't overthrow a regime through a bombing campaign. So what I meant by bringing up Gaza was just that it sort of shows you that what we're doing in Iran is just utterly asinine. It can never work. It will never work. So why are we pursuing it, I guess, is my question.
Well, let me ask you this. How do you think the regime fell in 1979? If according to you, it's impossible to overthrow a regime, there was an Iranian revolution, right? The Shah abdicated. The mullahs were able to overthrow him with actually quite a minimum of force. So why is it the case that they are now invincible? It's impossible to overthrow them. I think you're presuming they have massive support among the Iranian people. Why do you presume these things?
Well, I didn't say it's impossible for regimes to change. I said it's impossible for us to effectively change a regime using the tactics we're now using. In other words, you can't airstrike your way to regime change. That has never happened. It happened in 1979 because they had popular support to wage an uprising. But we didn't have popular support this time, despite all of the attempts
to generate it. Let's assume that the Iranian revolution after 50 years is relatively unpopular, it certainly has its advocates, right? I mean, all totalitarian regimes have advocates. There were plenty of advocates of the old Soviet Union. The Chavistas, of course, support socialism in Venezuela. And there are plenty of people who support the mullahs and benefit from the power structure of the regime. However, it seems like after 50 years that this Islamic indoctrination project in Iran has not been all that successful. And there is popular resistance to it. Now, the popular resistance is unarmed, whereas the regime is armed. And so external pulverization of the regime certainly can produce an internal popular uprising to overthrow the regime. I mean, a really good example is this. The United States in World War II, in the early years of World War II, pulverized Mussolini's Italy. And it was the Italians who revolted. They're the ones who actually grabbed Mussolini. They're the ones who actually killed him. They're the ones who overthrew fascism and then switched their allegiance from the Nazis to the West. But they did that because the Allies were able to weaken the military power of Mussolini's Italy. And so similarly here, I agree. I don't think that we in America can bring about regime change, but what we can do is create the conditions favorable to it and let the Iranians finish the job.
Isn't that what we tried to do? I mean, isn't that what has failed? And isn't that why we're in the situation we're in? I mean, it's a nice thought, but it didn't happen. I mean, Mossad went in there and armed the rebels, and it didn't work.
Well, I mean, this is an expedition that is, what, a few weeks old? I would say it has made massive successes already. No, has it succeeded in overthrowing the regime? I think it's fair to say that Trump never articulated that as the goal. Trump never said, we're going to keep going until we get rid of the mullahs. Maybe he secretly hoped that would happen, but it's one thing to hope that something will happen, and it's another thing as to what your actual military objectives are. And I think our military objectives were stated pretty clearly. And that
is... Well, they've changed a little bit. Hold on, we'll be right back. Dinesh D'Souza is my guest. Don't go anywhere.
Everything I sell to you works. Obviously, that's the goal. So that you get it, and you like it, and you want it to get it again. Everything I sell to you, we put deep research into, and I personally use. Now, I've been promoting zeolites for decades with great sponsors because they really work. I'm going to tell you what they are. Well, Bigly, our sponsor, has a really high quality private label top selling brand that we were able to private label. We're bringing to you right now. With the unprecedented toxins in the environment, with the chemtrailing, all the garbage in the food, it is more important than ever to take zeolites on a regular basis. But not all zeolites are created equal. This is really a high quality zeolite. Please do your own research. and then go to the alexjonesstore.com and secure our high-quality zeolite formula. Now let's go over just some of the incredible facts. We're swimming in toxins every single day. Metals from the air, chemicals in the food and water. Your body needs help binding and eliminating this garbage before it builds up and destroys your cells. Enter Zeolite Detox Defense, advanced binding agent. This isn't some gimmick. Zeolite is a naturally occurring volcanic mineral with a unique cage-like crystalline structure that acts like a molecular trap. Through ion exchange and absorption, it selectively grabs positively charged toxins, heavy metals, ammonia, and other unwanted compounds while letting beneficial minerals stay put. Then it escorts them straight out of your system through your gut. Paired with folic acid, it also supports healthy mineral transport and cleaner internal environment. Users report feeling lighter, more balanced, and clear-headed with consistent daily use. Just one dose a day gives you 60 full servings of detox support. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't steer you wrong. You know that. If you love our methylene blue, if you love our bovine colostrum, if you love the other incredible products like our T3 iodine, you are going to love this Zeolite detox formula. Secure yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you haven't checked out the other supplements like our methylene red that's proprietary to us, our ultramethylene blue that is on record the strongest and the best, then check it out today. And while you're there, check out the widest selection of Patriot apparel, baseball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, you name it, to spread the word of freedom in America and worldwide. Bottom line, thanks for keeping us on the air over the years. We're facing some of the biggest challenges ever to stay on the air. But thanks to you standing with us as our partners in the InfoWar, we are stronger than ever. So thank you so much for your support. Now please visit thealexjonesstore.com today. And if you want to get massive discounts on all the supplements, sign up as a subscriber. Lock in your orders in the future. You can cancel any time. So all you're really locking in is the massive discounts. Same thing with VIPs. Cancel any time. $30 a month. Get $40 to spend in the store. Special deals, special offers, special sales on everything. So if you're buying anything at thealexjonesstore.com, you should be a VIP. Thank you so much for your support. Now secure your Zeolite formula now at thealexjonesstore.com. The big health guy, you're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene blue before. I want you to take our medical grade. It takes 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
He's cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Doom, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. My guest is Dinesh D'Souza, author, filmmaker, and host of the weekly show, Dinesh. And I know you only had 30 minutes with us, but thank you for staying a few more minutes because you kind of got cut off there halfway through a question, or through an answer, rather. If you want to finish up your thoughts there, because we got cut off by the commercial break, then I got one more question about how this relates to American domestic politics. But was there anything you wanted to say there before we got cut off?
Yeah, although the United States has a lot of oil and a lot of natural gas, and one of the paradoxical effects of shutting down the Strait of Hormuz and blocking oil traffic in that region is lots of other people who are buying oil from the Middle East are now dependent on buying oil from either Venezuela or from us. And actually, Venezuela and America are now essentially collaborating. So it puts the United States in a very powerful position in the global oil market. Now, I do think that Trump needs to be thinking about closing this out and getting out. Precisely because of what you said earlier about the midterms. Ultimately, midterms are decided, as elections are decided generally, by domestic issues. We would like to see oil prices continue to drop. We would like to see a big boost in global markets. We would like to see some prosperity at home. We want to see the effects of the Trump tax cuts kicking in. I'd like to see an unleashing of the technology of robotics and AI. In other words, there's a lot of good stuff coming down the pike, but some of it may not come fast enough to help us in the midterms. And so I think the administration needs to move its eye from the foreign policy sector more toward the domestic sector, deliver on some of the promises that they haven't delivered on. Mass deportations, we haven't had enough. Indictments of prominent Democrats, we haven't had enough. So there are things that Trump needs to do on the domestic front. I think some of the dissatisfaction with Trump internationally is coming from the sense of frustration that he hasn't done enough at home. And so I think he should focus his attention there in the next several months.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well then you've answered my question, because that was my question is, you know, if prolonging this war ends up losing us the midterms, because this is obviously a major issue. I mean, we just saw yesterday J.D. Vance had an event. He's getting heckled by people at a TPUSA event about Israel. I mean, this is what's on people's minds, and they're really not happy. And it's not just that it's the Iran war. It's that we're doing this while it feels like not a lot is getting done at home. So, yeah, my question was, would it be worth it to keep this going if it meant that we lost midterms? It seems like you've answered
no.
That. Well, go ahead.
It's not worth it. I agree with that. I don't think that we should sacrifice the midterms on the altar of the Iran war. I think that's what you're getting at. And yeah. I would say no. But I think that we can conclude this in a very successful way. We already have a lot to show for it. And I do think that we have severely weakened Iran as a power in the region and also as an international menace. And I also agree with you, and I think this is really where MAGA can come together, is I don't think that these are radical differences. There are differences of emphasis. There are differences on the, you know, what is the role that Israel is playing in this conflict. I think it's not as big as people think it is, and it's certainly not the case that the Israeli tail is wagging the American dog. But I do agree that I think that domestic issues are paramount.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, whether or not it's the truth, I think there's a lot of evidence to that. And that's just, you know, I think the outrage that people feel is that we really feel like we're up against the wall here. We really feel like the sort of the deadline for fixing America is rapidly approaching, and we're soon going to be past, you know, beyond the point of no return. And so sort of the frustration that we're going to war with Iran, seemingly at the behest of Israel, according to, you know, a lot of statements at the beginning, it's that frustration magnified by the fact that we feel like we're losing our last chance to rescue this country, and things are really urgent right now. So it sounds like we agree on that. It sounds like we agree on the midterms, at least, and that if this Iran war is putting that in jeopardy, there are better things to focus on. So I'm glad we agree on this. I was afraid this was going to be contentious, but I think we're more aligned than not.
I think for sure. Look, I think what's happened is that part of the frustration of a lot of young people in particular is that this country seems to be putting everybody else at the top of the list and them at the very bottom of the list. And some of the hostility to Israel doesn't even come out of Israel per se. It's that this is part of a pattern. Like, we've seen this in many other incarnations, and this is just the latest expression of some other foreign country, some elite, some pressure group is going to get priority. Their interests are paramount. My interests don't really matter. I do think that the whole Trump movement is aimed at convincing this significant part of the population, no, I'm here as the president to protect your interests. It's very important that Trump and the Republicans convey this message in the next several months.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why he got elected in the first place, because we are sick of this type of activity going on in our federal government. And that's where the sense of betrayal comes in, because it's like, we sent you to not do this, and here you are seemingly doing it. And of course, I got more blame to throw at the Republican Party. I'm not even that mad at Trump. I'm mad at the Republican Party even more so, because I feel like they've really failed in all of this. But I know you got to go. We could talk forever. Thank you so much for being with us, Dinesh D'Souza. Where can people find your latest article, The Real Estate President, Iran Nukes and Leverage, Trump's Foreign Policy Confuses the Left and Right, because we expect him to be ideological? Where can people find this article?
You can actually read it on my Substack. It's dineshdesouza.substack.com. And then just follow me on X at Dinesh D'Souza. I post my weekly show every Monday on X and also on Rumble and YouTube.
Well, thank you very much, sir, for joining us and giving us a little extra of your time.
Hey, always a pleasure.
All right. Thanks, sir. All right, folks, we're gonna move on a little bit. But I do want to tell you right now at thealexjonesstore.com, you can get CMOS and Shilajit together. It's a special offer. When you subscribe to the CMOS capsules, which are one of my favorite products that we have, CMOS and Shilajit, I mean, these two are like my everyday. I usually do the gummies, though, because it feels like a treat. But if you order them for delivery every month, you get your first month absolutely free. Or if you subscribe for the Shilajit gummies, you get the first month of CMOS capsules absolutely free. Okay. Oh, I get it. So if you subscribe to CMOS capsules, you get Shilajit free. If you subscribe to Shilajit, you get CMOS free. So it's your chance to get both products working together without paying full price. But this is a very limited time offer. CMOS is Irish CMOS. It's loaded with essential minerals your body needs for daily wellness, natural vitality, and overall support. Shilajit is a powerful natural compound used to support energy, stamina, performance, and recovery. And I always say, I mean, these two products are like literal magic. Like when you hear about how they are developed and how they were discovered, it's straight up something you'd hear in like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter or something. Shilajit just spontaneously emerges out of mountain peaks. It's crazy. The Altai Mountains, the Himalaya Mountains, just disgorges this sort of tar, and the people who lived around it would notice that monkeys would eat it and be really energetic and like be running around. And so they discovered that this stuff is superfood, and it's incredibly powerfully packed with nutrients, and it's just like the best nutritional substance on earth, but it's got to be sourced the right way, and then it has to be filtered the right way. So we have the best filtering to make sure there's no heavy metals, there's no contaminants, there's no nothing. It's just the pure God-given manna from heaven, basically. Like, again, spontaneously emerges in mountain peaks. What more could you want? But of course, it's not just where and how it's created by God without explanation. It's the incredible power that it has. It's been recognized for centuries for the people in these areas. They've eaten it. We've just taken this natural compound, filtered it, purified it, made it so that's totally healthy, just the healthy stuff. But we take advantage of this just incredible spontaneously created substance, which is very similar to the Irish sea moss. The Irish sea moss, during the Irish famine, people were starving and sort of out of desperation. They're like, let's eat the sea moss. Let's see if that, and it turns out it's a superfood. It turns out something about the North Irish Sea creates this sea moss that is a superfood, that is like everything you could possibly need. It's actually saved tons of lives. During the Irish famine, they realized, well, there's this incredibly nutritious plant just spontaneously created in the ocean, washing up on shore. So again, we take it, we scrub it down, we filter out any impurities or imperfections and deliver to you just this God-given superfood magical potion that's just incredible. And you'll feel the difference. Shilajit gummies and CMOS capsules, you can get them together for extra discount today at thealexjonesstore.com. And of course, you're going to want to get any InfoWars branded merchandise now while you still can, since we will not be able to sell you that logo for much longer. Of course, the T3 iodine is incredible as well. Lots of great stuff. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. And now we'll move on from the Iran stuff, even though I feel like a lot of this relates to it. But there's also a lot of American news to get into. And I'm always a little bit torn about these things because, for one thing, ignorance is bliss. And I'd rather not have to tell you about some of this stuff. Some of this stuff is just horrifying. And I guess if it was my goal just to, I don't know, get clicks or tantalize you or whatever, then I could just show you gruesome, horrifying videos all day, every day. Maybe that would work. I'm not really interested in that unless it goes along with some greater topic, right? Unless it is indicative of a wider trend that's occurring. Well, it's kind of hard to tell when that trend begins, right? If you've got a story today about an instance of something happening, and then that same thing happens next week, and then it happens 3 weeks, it's like, is this a trend? Is this? But when something's happening every day, when it seems to be happening multiple times a day, when it seems to be indicative of a systematic program being run, I think we need to talk about it. And what we're talking about, what I'm talking about now, is the phenomenon, the trend, the civilization-destroying reality of the fact that people with criminal records a mile long, in some cases 100 convictions in 30 years of their life, are being let out onto the streets to kill people. And it's happening at a regular clip, almost as if it's on purpose. And it's one of these things that I find frustrating to cover because it's so obvious what's going on. And it's like, I don't even know how to explain it. But, you know, if there was some situation that, you know, oh, it's difficult to figure out what to do here. But in these situations, it's just, we have to throw these people in prison forever. That's it. That's just the answer. It's not complicated. It's not difficult to figure out. Things go so off the rails here. Any sort of, you know, liberty, any sort of vulnerability in our system just immediately gets hijacked and turned towards our destruction. So I can understand, theoretically, in extremely extenuating, unique, almost non-existent circumstances, people go insane and commit crimes because they are genuinely mad. They're genuinely insane. They do not know right and wrong. It usually, if this is the case, it's usually because they're on drugs or have some other like diagnosable mental illness. An example would be like Rob Reiner. Okay, when you have, you know, this is like millionaire Hollywood elite family, and the son massacres the family. It's like, it's inexplicable. It's crazy. There's no reason to it. You can't. Okay, in certain circumstances, maybe like that, maybe, you know, in situations like that, or you got a guy who genuinely believes that he's like fighting demons and is just like stabbing children, it's just like insane. Okay, maybe in extenuating circumstances, you have this provision that says, look, this is a special circumstance. We can't really punish this guy in the normal way because he's not going to respond in the normal way. And when that's the case, it should be automatic life in a mental institution. Like, that's it. These have to be the options. Either you are sane enough to be held to account for your actions, or you cannot live in society. Why do I have to explain this? This is what I mean by, like, my frustration. Like, I don't even want to cover this stuff, because what am I supposed to do? Sit here and be like, hey, when a woman lights her father on fire to kill him, don't let her out onto the street with my children. Do I need to explain this? Is this something that's complicated to figure out? Apparently so. So to me, it's not about this being a conspiracy necessarily. It's just a generalized insanity that we're currently having to deal with. And I don't know how we get people to overcome this. I just don't. If you don't immediately see how insane all of this is, what am I supposed to do? Explain it to you? When you have a guy who's been arrested, tried, and convicted 60 times, just imagine that. He's not 60 years old, so more than once a year, right? Let's say his habit of criminality has lasted 30 years. Every 6 months, this guy is costing the American taxpayer $50,000 because we have to arrest him, we have to hold him, we have to try him, we have to provide him a lawyer, we have to provide the state a lawyer, we have to convict him, we get the conviction, and then he's out on the street, and 6 months later, we go through it all again. What are we doing? And when are we not going to take it anymore? Because there's no, like, appealing to reason with this. If reason was applicable, it never would have been implemented in the first place. Mentally ill woman released by Nebraska courts kidnaps and slashes 3-year-old boy in the face at Walmart before hero cops shoot her. Now, honestly, they probably would have shot her before she slashed the child. Only, you know, they don't want to spend the rest of their life in jail, which may very well have happened. This is, again, the real danger. I was thinking about this yesterday. The story cropped up again. There was a story last year, the year before, of a, it was a black guy went into a hospital and he was like trying to stab a baby. He was in the newborn wing, the like delivery wing of the hospital where the expectant mothers and the newborn babies are. And he like went insane and was trying to strangle a baby and the baby turned blue. Do y'all remember that? And at the time it was like, the problem is if anybody had, he was acting erratic and he was being all crazy and nobody called the cops. He's in a hospital with a bunch of newborn babies acting like an insane person, and everybody's too scared to call the cops because it was after George Floyd had been killed. And it was like, oh, well, until they stab a baby, you can't call the cops or else you're racist and you'll lose your job. And literally, I mean, the woman, before she stabs the kid, if the cop shoots her dead and her family gets the NAACP and whoever else to come along and sue the department or demand an investigation, then suddenly, you know, the cop himself is getting the Derek Chauvin treatment and being stabbed multiple times in the federal penitentiary as he serves out his 18-year sentence, right? So that's going through his mind, making him delay the correct action for just that split second necessary for her to permanently scar a child. Suspect accused of choking two infants after forcing his way into Odessa hospital nursery. Again, he was acting erratic and being crazy for multiple minutes before actually attacking, and finally the cops called. But they were afraid to call the cops because it was a black guy, and you can't call the cops on black guys until they actually try to kill you, in which case you better have it on camera. Schizophrenic woman who slashed toddler in Omaha Walmart parking lot previously found not guilty by reason of insanity. How is that a thing? How is that a thing? Not guilty by reason of insanity means you're admitting you're incapable of understanding the consequences of your actions and you should be locked up for life. Anybody saying that they're insane in court, the only reaction should be that they get life in prison. That's it. That's the only way to deal with this. So this is what I mean. It starts off with like, okay, maybe there's this extenuating circumstance where this dude's insane. We can't put him in with the regular criminals and we can't just put him away for 5 years. He's crazy. We better, you know, circumvent this whole trial thing and just send him to a mental hospital since everybody acknowledges he's crazy and his act was an act of insanity. And then you take that, you stretch it, you warp it, you manipulate it to where the crime itself is seen as evidence of insanity. In other words, the guy who killed Irina Zarutska is not going to trial because he's been declared insane. I guess because who would stab a random person? They must be insane. Anybody who just stabs a random person, they must be crazy because only a crazy person would stab a random person. So this guy's sitting on a train with a bunch of black people for multiple minutes until a pretty young white girl gets on. Then he gets up, walks past several black people once again to stab the white girl and walks around the train saying, I got that white girl. But he was just crazy. He didn't know what he was doing. He just happened to target a specific type of person. Just like all these people are a specific type of person. Just like every day we see another example of a young, attractive, upstanding white person just murdered in cold blood out of the blue by a random black person, many of whom have been in prison multiple times, dozens of times in some cases. Some who were guilty of the most insane, violent, extreme acts, some cases against their own family, but because they say they're insane, they just get let out? They get let out. Again, do I need to explain to you why that is nonsense? Like, what are we doing here? All I can tell you is that this is what's happening, and the judges have to pay the price for it. It's not necessarily the rabid dog that I blame for biting my child. It's the judge who threw him into the preschool with my child and then locked the door. That's the person I blame. That's the person who should be held to account for this. And I am continually amazed at the mercy and patience of the American people, because I would have a different reaction personally if somebody in my life was seriously hurt or murdered by somebody who was just let out on the street. I'd be killing everyone. I'm just being honest with you. I don't know. Maybe people are more, they believe in our system, our glorious society here. Like, do you understand that people are only going to be pushed for so long? And once that happens, it's a feedback loop that doesn't end. So when I'm saying this, it's not a threat by any means, nor is it an encouragement for anybody else doing it. It is a stark and desperate warning for the people who run our Justice Department that, like, this can't go on much longer. This is beyond unacceptable. Maybe it hits me different because I have a 3-year-old child. But bring up the image again. Bring up the image of this insane demon woman with a butcher knife stabbing a 3-year-old who doesn't even know what the hell's going on. The kid's like looking over his shoulder. He's stuck in a shopping cart looking for his mom. Meanwhile, this literal demon witch is going at him with a butcher's knife. Be a rude awakening for this kid of what the real world is like nowadays. You know, Donald Trump is very concerned about NATO. He's desperate to acquire Greenland. We're going to war in Iran so that Israel can steal Lebanon. And meanwhile, this is what Walmart looks like at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday in the middle of America. A woman in Omaha slashed a child during an attempted kidnapping in a Walmart parking lot before she was shot and killed by police. It was just 1 year ago that 31-year-old Noam Guzman was charged to be a danger, ruled to be a danger to herself and others. The child, Kyler, underwent surgery at Children's Nebraska and is recovering. Police were called to Walmart around 9:20 a.m. When they arrived, they found Guzman holding a knife to the toddler, just 3 years old. The child in a shopping cart had been taken from inside the store after Guzman threatened the caregiver with a knife and forced them outside. The knife she had was stolen, and she cut the child on his face and arm. Officers gave Guzman verbal commands, to which she did not respond. They later said it was not known why Guzman approached the child or harmed him. Oh, well, maybe she was just insane. You know, maybe it would be like mean to put her in. We should let her go. She didn't have a reason to stab a child. So that's evidence she's insane. We can't convict her. That'd be mean. So I guess we have to let her go. I guess, right? She lit her father on fire a year ago and they let her out because she was insane. Why? Why do we do this? Why is this a thing? Why do I have to report on it? And when are we going to stop putting up with it? When are we going to stop putting up with judges letting out feral dogs into our preschools? Because it's up to us. We're letting it happen.
Here at the InfoWars studio in Austin, Texas, there's not a single desk, workstation, or studio where you can't find a half-empty product from thealexjonesstore.com. That's because we all put our money where our mouth is. And you too can be confident that you're putting into your body the absolute best supplements, nootropics, drink mixes, and tinctures that money can buy. So to all of you who are on the fence about ordering from thealexjonesstore.com, what are you waiting for? And to all of you who've made the commitment, we here at InfoWars salute you, and we'd like to say,
thank you for your support.
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 Thank you for your support at thealexjonesstore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.